Okay, so we're going to start, and it's a very, very practical and contemporary shiur that happens a lot, which means that in many different venues, which means, let's say, you're a person who's in seminary, and you're learning certain halachot, and now all of a sudden you went through a great class in Hilchot Shabbat, and now all of a sudden you know, good afternoon, you now know something you didn't know previously. And now you know, for example, your parents who didn't know about this halacha. Do you have an obligation to go tell your parents, hey, dad and mum, or abba and ima, or daddy, or pops, or whatever you call them, tati, whatever you call them, you should know I learned this halacha, and what you've been doing for the last 15 years is wrong. That's like one example. Let me give you other examples that come up. They literally come up all the time. I was a rabbi in a camp, and I saw a boy not wearing tzitzit. Do I have an obligation to say, hey, you're not doing the right thing? Okay, there's a mitzvah to say, we'll go through a lot of different examples. I'll give you another one, which is connected, but same idea. I told you I'm teaching this coming Sunday night in Bar Ilan around 2 years ago. I used to teach like once a week because I would encourage people to make aliyah for those people that it's right for, and for many people it is right for. So I encourage them. And then I would go teach them once a week there. So I got a phone call from one of the girls that I was teaching to say, look, I wanted to give like a lollipop on Rosh Chodesh, where Erev Rosh Chodesh Tam was now. I want to give a lollipop, but I'm not sure they're going to make a brach. Am I allowed to do that? So that's a sugya called Lifnei Iver Lo Titei Mechshol. We'll see how this is connected to this general topic. The topic is, do I have an obligation to rebuke, in quotes, someone who's less committed than I am? And what I want to deal with is to understand this mitzvah asei, which is the first source in front of you. The first source in front of you, it's in Parshat Kiddushim, that says you're not allowed to hate your brother in your heart, lo tisnat achicha b'levavecha, but rather, what do you have to do? Hocheach tochiach et amitecha, v'lo tisa alav chet. What do you have to do? You shall surely rebuke your friend, and not have some sort of chet, not bear any iniquity. Okay? This mitzvah of rebuking, what I want to deal with you today and for the next short time, is to ask you, what is the nature of this mitzvah? What's the scope? Again, if I see somebody sinning, do I have an obligation to rebuke them? Does it matter about the severity of the sin? Whether it's biblical, whether it's rabbinic, whether it's written in the Torah, does it matter if they're transgressing it on purpose, not on purpose? Does it matter who I am, a rabbi, a person of authority, or like the examples I gave, which is a son or a daughter, a peer, a friend? Does it matter who they are? Not only who you are, does it matter who they are? Who's your audience? Okay, not only how they are maybe transgressing, but the quantity of people. Does it matter if it's one-on-one or one-on-50? Those are the major questions. So just to go over, to review these four questions, if I would say it, the general question is, what is this mitzvah? Does it even apply today? Does it even apply? Some would say, somebody asked Rav Nevinzal, you know, does it apply today? Because maybe no people don't know how to do it today. So he says, first of all, not to totally pull the carpet under me, it applies today. Now the question is, how much does it apply? Okay, and what I'd like to do is both in halacha and hashkafa, to be able to help us, that you'll have the proper tools, the proper framework, not even the tools, but the framework to know whether I should actually go and rebuke them. And I said, so number one, what is the nature of the mitzvah? Number two, does it matter the actual sin that they're transgressing? Doraita, derabanan. Does it matter how they're transgressing? Whether it's on purpose, by accident? Does it matter who I am? The one, does it matter my position? Does it matter if I'm a rabbi, I'm a camp counselor? Does it matter, again, parent, peer? Does it matter who they are and how many they are? Those are the questions, okay, that we're going to try to answer. Any questions on the questions?
Does it only apply if you know that they'll make a change?
Good. That's exactly what we're asking. Great question.
Like, if you know that they're not going to change.
Great. Exactly. I know for sure that's part of it. If I know for sure, there are going to be three questions with this, which is built into the four questions I said, which I said, what is the nature of the mitzvah of rebuking? What you had asked is, let's say I know for sure they're not going to listen. So does that mean that the mitzvah doesn't apply? That's question number one with a certain assumption. The assumption is that the reason I'm giving them rebuke is for them to change. We will see that there might be a disagreement about that, A. B, let's say the other extreme is they know for sure they will change, mm-hmm. which I knew you assumed. And then you have the middle one, which is what? I'm not sure if they're going to change. Okay? Those are all things that we're going to discuss right now. Okay? So, as a good rabbi, to be able to answer the questions, what am I going to do? I'll ask another question. Why not? Right? If you look at the next two sources, seem to be a contradiction, to give us a certain starting point. We have two Gemaras, one of the Gemara Yevamos on 65b, Samach Amud Bet, and also the Gemara in Erechin on Tet Zayin Amud Bet. That seemed to be a contradiction. And we're going to give, I'm just giving you the game plan here. The game plan is we're going to give you three different answers and then see how it plays out. And within that, go to the Halacha and the Hashkafa. That's the plan of action. Okay? So what's the seeming contradiction? The second source is that the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Lo, Mishim Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon, Kishim Shem Mitzvah Ladam Lomar Davar Hanishma. Just like it's a mitzvah to say something that is going to be heard, so too, Kach Mitzvah Ladam Shelo Lomar Davar She'enu Nishma. You hear this? What does he say? He says, just like it's a mitzvah to say something that you're actually, that the person's going to hear, so too, hello Shosh. So too, what is the other part of it? What's the other part of it? So too, make sure not to say, comes back to your question, right?
Yeah.
Not to say it if it's not going to be heard. Okay? Now, there's another opinion in the Gemara here that says it's not a mitzvah, but a chovah. We're not going to get into that exact disagreement, whether it's a mitzvah or a obligation. We will get later into this pasuk in Mishlei in chapter 9. We'll get back to that. That's source number one. Source number two is this Gemara in Erechin. Okay? I would ask people to read. I'm afraid since it doesn't have nekudot that people are not going to want to read, but any brave volunteers? Because I don't want it to, thank you, because I don't want it to be a monologue here. Okay, the third source on the page.
Yeah?
Arechan. Yeah.
Arechan tochecha, Rav.
Very good. Yeah.
Rav Amar, ad hecha, v'shmuel Amar, ad klala, v'rabi Yochanan Amar, ad nezifa.
Good.
Ketanai, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, ad
haka'a.
Haka'a, Rabbi Yoshua Omer, ad klala, ben Azai Omer, ad nezifa.
Good. So we have both a machloket Tanaim and Amoraim. We always ask this then in the mitzvah, which is, what is the shear? Until how far do you have to go to actually rebuke the person? How far do you have to go? Right? And I said we've talked about in many, many different circles here, whether it's campers and counselors, parents, siblings, friends. These are all the different, this is real life issues here. That's why we learn Torah, because Torah is real life. Okay? Now, so here we have a machloket of how far do you have to go. Rav says, I have to rebuke the person until the guy starts hitting me, or the girl starts hitting me. Sounds almost extreme, right? It's pretty crazy. On one level. Another level you say it's maybe not so crazy, because who cares that if a person, the other side of the coin is, when we have somebody starts cursing me, then, you know, if a guy hits me, I'm going to start eating non-kosher. Right, so that in itself is maybe not as extreme. Okay, the second opinion is until the person curses you, not hurts you or hits you. And the third one is nizifa, which is some sort of rebuke, some sort of like middle approach there. But does anybody see, can anybody formulate for me what I said is a seeming contradiction between these two sources? How is this a seeming contradiction?
The first one says you shouldn't say something if you know it's not going to be heard, and the second one says you should, even if they're not going to hear it.
Even if they're not going to hear it, what do you mean they're not going to hear it? They're going to be like, what? Even hitting you, cursing you, rebuke, you know. That's the seeming contradiction. Yes? Good? Clear?
Yes.
Exciting? Yeah, make me feel good. Okay, yes, a very exciting rabbi, very exciting. Oh, this is amazing. This is what I want to spend my afternoon doing. Yes, good, exactly, that's what I like. This is the excitement I like in Torah. Good. We're going to give three different approaches, which I think is very exciting, and very practical, and very contemporary, and very important to our religious ethos and who we are as young ladies here. And I'll talk for myself as a young man. Okay, yes, you can laugh at me that I call myself a young man. I appreciate that. Thank you. Smile. Laugh. It's all good. It's dignified. It's good. It's called salt and pepper. It works out very well. Now, says the sheet. Laughing at me, I know. Very good. Sheet the mikubetzes. Okay, the first answer is as follows. It's in. He asked the question, which we said, that it's a contradiction. It's in the highlighted, in the fourth source in front of you. And then, after saying that it's a contradiction, he says it's not a contradiction. The last two lines. He says, the truth is, it's not a contradiction. Velo kasha adadi. He says, these two Gemaras are not conflicting. I mean, the second to last line in the fourth source, in the fifth word, it says, velo kasha adadi. It's not a problem. Why? Remind me your name again?
Aviva.
What Aviva said is that it seemed to be a contradiction. Why is it a contradiction? The first source says, keep your mouth shut if you know they're not going to listen to what you're saying. Second source says what? Say it until they hit you or curse you, etc. So how is it not a contradiction? Can anybody tell me how it's not a contradiction? Before we give the start giving some of the answers?
Maybe if they hit you, it shows that they're listening.
There you go. Bang. Very good, Aviva. Very good. That's the first answer. Very good. Marissa doesn't understand it.
No, I did.
You did.
Did you? Later. Oh.
Oh, that's if they're a little louder. I don't know the Australian. It's an oh! That's what it is. It's an oh! You lose your key. Well, you don't have a key. Right there. Oh! Right, it's a very beautiful idea. It's a beautiful idea. You didn't understand it. It's good. Aviva's going to say it again. Go ahead. The assumption of the question was...
that if they're hitting you or cursing you or whatever, it's because they're not listening to you.
And that's why it was a contradiction. Aha! Answer.
But if they're hitting you or cursing you or rebuking you, they are actually listening to you.
Mm. Understand
yeah,
that?
But...
Do you understand what that means? It's a deep psychological insight. It's a deep psychological insight. Which means that there are times that there's a knee-jerk reaction or you hit a chord in somebody that they don't want to hear it. My job a lot of times is to do this. After I build a relationship with people, I try to softly, which we'll talk about, help them continue being better themselves. You understand what I mean by that? Not just ripping them apart. But sometimes these things are hurtful. I know I should have been doing this, and I know, and I'm having problems with this. Yeah. I mean, thank God I try to encourage all the good behavior. So this is what Aviva explains, what Ramosha Cohen, the Sheet of Mekubetz's quote to Ramosha Cohen, for very deep psychological insight. You thought it was a contradiction that you're not listening because I'm saying, when I'm rebuking you, you're cursing me out. It's the opposite. By you cursing me, up to you cursing me, or wanting to hit me, that shows that actually you are being heard. Because a lot of times it just hurts sometimes to be...
Inciting your reaction.
Yeah, to hearing the truth about yourself. And that it hits a chord, and it's painful even to the point that you might curse the person. And that might be the outer reaction. The inner reaction is you're actually being heard by you rebuking the person. One of the guys who just left Yeshiva HaKotel asked me, "What tips should I give them as a counselor?" One of the tips I give him as a counselor, he was from Canada, so he used the word instead of curse words. He said the word swearing. Okay. So when a kid swears, I told him, you know what? When a kid swears, the immediate reaction, obviously, it's gonna be connected a little bit, connected to this shear that we'll talk about. But obviously it depends on the context, I told him. But first and foremost, a lot of times you have to know when a person is swearing, there's a context behind it. There's a reason why they're doing it. You don't just have a knee-jerk reaction of saying, "What's wrong with you? Why are you using the F-bomb and the S-curse and all these different curses?" Right? But rather, there must be something going on behind these swears. Is it just because they're socially not confident? and therefore they need to use that F-bomb in order to like make all their friends laugh, right? So now I'm going to be popular. Or is it because they're angry? There's a reason for it. Now some people will say, okay, this is psychobabble. Could be. It could be. But a lot of it, there's some truth to that. And if you pick up on it and say that, and don't just call them out and say, what's wrong with you? Then you actually are going to be building a relationship with them, which is where we're going to get to somewhat in this shiur also. I did tell them which we're going to get to also, if it's in the public, right, and you're with five chanechim, and everyone starts, you know, swearing away, then you shouldn't say, you know what, oh, you're all so beautiful, you must have hard lives. No, you still have to have some sort of, some rules. Okay, so that's the first approach. The first approach is, even if they're going to, you have to rebuke them, even if they come and hit you or curse you, because then actually maybe you're doing a good job. Because then actually you're doing a good job. There's a second answer. A second answer might be, and this is what we alluded to at the beginning, is it depends on how the person is performing the error, the sin. This is a possible second answer that we're going to see is going to start getting into some of the nitty-gritty of this mitzvah. Which means what? I wrote down over here, shogeg versus mazon. Okay? Does it depend on how they are performing or transgressing with the sin? So, and I also mentioned the idea, and this is where the Gemara is going to get to, does it matter if it's biblical or rabbinic? If it's d'oraita or the rabbanan? Okay? For example, which we're going to see possibly, first of all, those two might be interconnected and they might be separate also. And I'll explain what I mean. What would you say? Let's just throw it out there. What would you say is the difference? If it's both biblical or rabbinic or shogeg versus mezid, everyone knows what shogeg versus mezid is. Shogeg is by accident. Mezid is on purpose. Okay? Mm-hmm. How would you make the distinction then between the two Gemaras? About whether if a person's performing a sin by accident versus by mazid, when should I rebuke them, when should I not rebuke them?
You shouldn't rebuke them if it's by accident, because it wasn't intentional.
Okay.
But is it accidental as in they don't know like what they're doing, or they literally just like didn't realize that they were doing it?
So that might not be halachically categorized as accident. That might be called as what's called mita'asek. I didn't even realize I was doing it. So that will put that in the category.
What about...
But you said... I can't remember. It's not chaviva. It's chana.
It's not like asur.
You didn't finish your... You finished your thought. You were saying very good things. Say what you said. If what?
If it's by accident, then it's not like... You're not doing something wrong.
Is that true?
Well, it depends. Like, certain things, yes. Like, you still are.
There are korbanot for things that you did wrong. Now, if you learned Vayikra, you would, right? You'd see that, and that's part of the question, which means that if I do something by accident, it might not be as serious as mazid, but it's still doing something wrong.
Also, if someone's like on a lesser level of observance,
we'll get there. Good. That's it. That's all this. It's all this. Good. We'll get there. That's exactly what we're going to talk about.
It's also about how you agree.
Good. We're going to get there also. First, finish your thought, Chana. If it's by accident, you want to say what? Then you have to rebuke them?
Yeah, but no. You wouldn't do it until they're arguing and screaming. Like, you might just tell them, oh, like...
So you're already holding back from that Gemara. You don't like that Gemara. But the Gemara says until they actually hit you. Versus what? Okay, that's fine. I didn't say you have to like it. And then Mazid. What's by Mazid? Thank you. Do you have to or not?
Yeah.
So then you didn't give me any answer then.
Well, one's like an intentional sin.
I understand. So it's an intentional sin. Do you have to give them rebuke or not?
Yes.
Yes. And then by accident, you have to give them rebuke?
Like, maybe you could let them know so that it's not an accident anymore, and then it's their choice whether it's like they're sinning on purpose or they take it on.
Now that's going to be a big problem. Good. You didn't give me the full answer, but you gave me some good material to lead into the next source. So thank you. No! You're doing great. The whole world's going to hear how great Chana is. There it is. Nobody knows who Chana is, but they'll send me an email and say, Chana's great. Now, no problem. Gemara and Beit Daf Lamed, the next source, discusses a case about the talks about the not dancing or clapping on Shabbat or Chag, which might be rabbinic. We're not going to get into it, that nowadays we can. It's a whole different sugya of how we do it. But then the Gemara talks about after that, talks about how on Erev Yom HaKippurim, that women would continue doing their work and eat, and nobody said anything to them at all. And first of all, just as an introduction, there's a mitzvah called Tosefet Yom HaKippurim, which means, just like many of the people have heard here about Tosefet Shabbat, that you add on some time to Shabbat. Some people I don't know if they do it in Australia.
Yeah,
they bring it in early.
Yeah.
Right? So there's a mitzvah called Tosefet Shabbat. So there you have a machloket, whether that's actually a mitzvah on Shabbat, machloket between the Rambam and others. But on Yom Kippur, everyone agrees that it's even biblical. It's a mitzvah d'oraita to accept Yom Kippur early. But within that sugya, here in Masechet Beitz and Daf Lamed, the Gemara says that there's a concept of if a person is doing something wrong b'shogeg, it says mutav shiyu shogegin v'al yu mizidim. They say that it's better to what? Better to keep it if they're sinning it, what? With shogeg, and if you tell them, then what's going to happen?
They'll have intent.
They now have intent and become mizidim. So originally the Gemara said maybe that rule only applies by rabbinic laws. But by Doraisa, you would not say that.
Wait, if a person does something wrong by accident...
If a person is doing something wrong by accident, should I be telling them or not? That's part of the question here.
But what, did the Gemara give an answer?
So the Gemara first says that there's a rule. The golden rule is, mutav shiyu shogegin v'ayu mizidim. Okay, that's in the fourth source right in front of you. Right? It says, it's better to be by accident and not to be on purpose. But then the Gemara wanted to qualify that rule. And says maybe that's only by the Rabbanim. But by Doraita, we don't say that. But the Gemara says, no, that's not true. You know why that's not true? This rule applies whether it's biblical or rabbinic, and I said why before. Because Tosefet Yom HaKippurim, adding on to Yom Kippur, to your fast a little bit, a couple minutes before the night of Yom HaKippurim, is a biblical mandate. And the women in that case, they ate, they drank, nobody said anything to them. So what do we see? We see that even if it's biblical, we have this rule that it's better if someone's shogeg, then what? Leave them to be shogeg and not to be mazin. So there's a rule like that. Now, what?
Like it's with the Eruv.
It's a big question. It's a major, major question in camps or even in communities.
No, I thought that if like you know that the Eruv's down and you know that the person like has no chance of going home, like you can't tell, you shouldn't tell them.
Right. That's exactly
thing, yeah.
Yeah, it's a very, very similar idea, 100%. Very, very similar. Right? That's the big question about if the Eruv falls down in the middle of Shabbos and you see it, do you tell the campers, do you tell the community? Very big, very, very, very good point. Now, within this, so it is not so clear how far do we do this rule of mutav shiyu shogegin ve'al yu mizidim, which means
it's still applying to people who you would assume would want to be keeping the mitzvot.
There you go. Good. As I said, the who. That's what we're going to get to. Let's say you know for sure that, right, that's exactly the point. And we're going to get to at least two qualifying pieces about that. Meaning you're asking, what Aviv is asking is, if I'm not mistaken, let's say you know for sure they're not going to listen to you. Is that what you're saying? Or because they're not religious, or they hate you, or all these different types of things. That's what we're going to get to right now. Meaning, so one could have claimed that this would be the distinction then. That by the case of Shogeg, when did the Gemara say not to say a word? When did the Gemara say that you should not say anything? That's when the case of shogeg. You know why you shouldn't say anything? Because if you do say something and they're not going to listen to you, what's going to happen?
Then
now they're going to start doing mazid. So that would be the Gemara in Yevamot. The Gemara in Yevamot might be applying this concept to say, it is once I know the person's not going to listen to me, by shogeg, then what should I do? Keep my mouth shut. Versus when the, because I don't want to get them to mazid. But once the guy is mazid already, so either number one is I'm not increasing them to go to become mazid. Number two, even if the guy's going to hit me, I have an obligation to give rebuke because the person's mazid. And maybe the person will listen to me, even if they won't. And that would be the Gemara. That would be this distinction. The distinction would be that the Gemara in Yevamot would be talking about shogeg. And if it's shogeg, keep your mouth shut in order not to help that person become mazid. Versus the Gemara in Erechim would say, if the person has been mazid, you have an obligation, even if the guy's not going to listen to you. You hear this? So again, by the case of shogeg, make sure to keep your mouth shut so you don't get that, you don't make them be in a worse circumstance. Versus the case of mazid, even if the person's not going to listen to you, you make sure you have a mitzvah to rebuke the person. Which would be very interesting already. Telling us about what the nature of rebuke is, if that would be true. Because the person is mazid, and I still have to rebuke them, even if I know they're not going to listen to me. This is a proposed solution. And if that would be true, it would not be like what Chana said earlier. Most people, if I were to ask you, what is the nature of the mitzvah of rebuke, is I want to say it in a soft way. I want to say it in a way in order to help the person do what? To fix their ways. But it's possible that maybe it's not that. Maybe it's, you see a person sinning, you have to rebuke them even if they're not going to listen. They're doing something wrong.
It's like the prophets.
Something like the prophets, which means one could make that distinction whether the mitzvah is a ben adam l'makom mitzvah or a ben adam l'chaveiro mitzvah. The way that Chana approached it is that it's a ben adam l'chaveiro, I'm trying to help them be better. So if I know that they're going to listen, then I should rebuke them. Versus this suggestion, which we will see, that is made by the Sefer Yerayim, one of the Rishonim, and is brought down partially lahalacha also by the Magen Avram, is that even if the person is mazid and you know he's not going to listen to you, still you have a mitzvah to rebuke them. And that would be the Gemara Ne'erchim. And the reason would be because you have to protect Kavod Shamayim. That you see a desecration of God's name that's happening as a result of a sin. And therefore, even if the person doesn't do it, you have to stick up for God's name. Now, to the extreme, and don't ever quote me, that Cutler is legitimizing throwing rocks on Shabbos at Chilul Shabbos, and people are driving cars. You might have heard this before. Shabbos! You ever heard that before? Shabbos! Right? So I never understood it. It always drove me crazy for years. Person who's involved in trying to help people see the fruits of religion, at the same time knowing that there are complications of religion. And again, as I said, I am totally not legitimizing to throw rocks on Shabbos, even if you want to put a rock aside and make sure that it's not muksa. But there is such a concept that when we desensitize ourselves to certain aveirot, then all of a sudden we're desensitized and we don't even realize the rupture in the relationship that we're having with God by these sins happening. So there is some concept, even though, again, the throwing of the rocks is the most ridiculous example that came to mind, but there is a concept of being able to rebuke, even though the guy or the girl who I'm saying to will not listen, because I'll make sure within my conscience that the Kavod Shamayim is not being desecrated. Now, this approach is brought down by is brought down by the Avni Nezer. That is the last source on the first page. This approach is brought down by the Avni Nezer. His name was the Sachachavar. That's not his name, that's just what they called him. His name was Rav Avraham Bornstein. Am I messing that up? That's his son, excuse me. His son was the Shemi Shmuel. The Avni Nezer was the Sachachavar. There's Rav Shmuel Bornstein. Also the Shemi Shmuel. I'm just like messing up which one's which now. Avni Nezer is Rav Avraham Bornstein. Thank you. Rav Avraham Bornstein is the father. He wrote the Sefer called Avni Nezer, which is responsive literature. And he also wrote a very, very important Sefer on Hilchot Shabbat. Which now, because I'm tired, I see it's a black Sefer. The Egel Ital, thank you. The Egel Ital. Okay, and he has a son named the Shemi Shmuel, Rav Shmuel Bornstein, who wrote a very, very important Hasidic Sefer called the Shemi Shmuel on Parsha that a lot of people like learning. So he writes here in the Avni Nezer this distinction, this answer to this contradiction. Remember, we started just 5 minutes ago. Time is flying. It's only 5 minutes when we started this year. Wow. Amazing, Shosh. 5 minutes. Okay, 5 minutes ago we had talked about this contradiction. Then Aviva helped decode for us that it was a contradiction. So the Avni Nezer in Ot Dalet here, in Tziman Tov Samach Aleph, says that even by Doraita, like we had just said in the first line, even by a biblical mitzvah, we say it's better to be shogeg and not mezid. And then he quotes this Sefer Yerayim that we said, that even by mezid, there is a mitzvah of hocheach tocheach amitecha, turn the page, or flip it around for you, page 2. Okay? And therefore, what he says by shogeg, since the person's not going to listen to you, he says, number one, there's no mitzvah of hocheach tochiach et amitecha, because it's better to be shogeg and not be mezid. And furthermore, there is no brotherhood of arevut, of kol Yisrael revim zebazeh, because you know the person's not going to listen to you. And therefore, by shogeg, you have to keep your mouth shut, says the Avni Nezer. And that's what the Gemara in Yevamos was referring to. As opposed to mezid, quoting, as I had said, from the Magen Avram, from the Yerayim, that where there is a mitzvah of ocheach tochiach, whether the guy listens to you or not, you have to rebuke them, even if you know for sure he's not going to listen to you. Okay? And here is his big, that would be answer number 2. Now, not everyone's going to agree to this answer number 2 for a couple of reasons. Number 1 is, not everyone's going to agree that that's the nature of the mitzvah of rebuke, like Hannah said originally. Yeah. The nature of mitzvah of rebuke may not be what's called kavod shamayim, to be able to just, if something's bad's happening, you got to open up your mouth.
Seems quite selfish that, like, if you know that, like, a person's not going to change, so, oh, well, I should just rebuke them anyway, because it's, like, to get it off my chest that I've done, like, my part.
So good question. I formulated in that way, I think, to help you understand that. I think it would be 2 parts. Number one is, or 3 ways to answer. Number one is, it's not as much selfish. It's a matter of, because that is not an the way I was presenting it before is it's not an interpersonal mitzvah. It's a mitzvah of being a person who's almost like a guardian for God. You're a person who's an ambassador for God. And even if the guy's not going to listen, people have to know, the world has to know, right? That the world is happening. It's a metaphysical idea. That it's saying this world is to perfect this world, not to destroy this world. That's why God created this world, in order to build it, not to destroy it. And therefore, that's why I'm saying a little stronger now, both in metaphysical terms and also just in our religious world, as we hone in into the frequency, is that we're not used to, and it comes back to the desensitized, of how destructive Averot are. No big deal. No, it's a big deal. Yeah, you like that voice, huh? Right? It's a big deal. It's a big deal. Okay? Now, back to what you said. I want to tell you what the Avni Nezer said also. The Avni Nezer said, and furthermore, I am correct, he says, V'chein mistaber shelo nichtav tama mitzvah b'Torah b'shvil shiyashuv midarko. He says, and this is correct, because the Torah did not write the rationale, the reason for the mitzvah explicitly in the Torah. Which means, Chana said, isn't the whole purpose that the person is going to what?
Change
and listen to me. Says the Avnei Nezer, the Torah doesn't say that explicitly. You're putting your own human thought into what the rationale is behind this mitzvah. That was one of the four questions I said. What is the nature of this mitzvah rebuke? Says the Avnei Nezer, the Torah doesn't say that. And it could very well be like the Yireim that says, you see a person sinning even if they don't listen to you, rebuke. No questions asked. Now, that in itself is a major sugya, which we're going to do very, very quickly. That first of all, it's not so clear that this answer is correct. Why? Because first of all, just in principle, in this pasuk, and number two, we need to even see how the halacha is brought down. Okay, first of all, in principle, what is he referring to? This is a principle that I hope you put in your purse, you put in your pockets, you put in your brain, wherever you're going to remember it, put it there. Deal? The principle is, are we what's called Doresh Ta'ama Dekra or not Doresh Ta'am Dekra? English. Do we give rationales for the reason behind the Pasuk or not? That is a machloket between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon in the Sugya, in the Gemara that I gave you on Daf Kuf Ted Vav Amud Aleph, that talks about the classical case that's brought down is a widow. We have, the Mishnah says, a widow, whether she is poor or rich, you are not to take a collateral from her. Which means what? I lent a widow some money. She can't pay it back. Okay, that would be the classical case, because she's a widow. Therefore, there's a rule of taking collateral. And specifically, what type of collateral would you take? You would take some clothes. You would take things that, what's it called? Smichot, in English. Bedding. You would take things that she might have. So the Mishnah quotes a pasuk in Parshat Ki Tetzeh that says, Lo tachabo beged almana. The Torah says, you should not take the beged of an almana as a collateral. Now, it's a Gemara, as I said, the Gemara now extrapolates a machloka between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yehuda, like the Mishnah had said, doesn't matter if she's poor or she's rich, you do not what? You don't take the collateral. Why? Because Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that we do not doresh time of the cross. Even though that would seemingly be the rationale. If that's the rationale that a quote-unquote a regular or common a widow is the one who is going to be poor, but doesn't matter. The Torah said, Lo tachabo beged almana, what's called carte blanche, we don't make any distinction whatsoever. You do not take a collateral from her. We are not saying, we don't darish time of the crop. As opposed to Rabbi Shimon says, hold on one second. What's Rabbi Shimon going to say? If she's rich, what does he say? Then you could take it. Because the whole rationale was for what? The whole rationale was, what the Torah had in mind was for a poor widow. Good? But if she's poor, then you can't. Okay? And this is what the Gemara says. It seems to be from here that Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion of it not being time at Doresh time of the Kra. And Rabbi Shimon is Doresh time of the Kra. The problem is, we go one step further. One step further is, the Gemara says, but hold on one second. We have another Parsha in Sefer Dvarim, in Parshat Shoftim, talking about the king. The king is not allowed to have a lot of wives. The king is not allowed to have a lot of wives. Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that he can have a lot of wives. Marbehu, as long as what? As long as he does not turn his heart both away from his wife and also from his mission. Rabbi Shimon says even by one, he can't do it because it's going to take it away from his heart and can't happen. Can't happen. So it sounds like the Rabbi Yehuda is Doresh time of the Krah, which means what? The Torah says that a king cannot have many wives. Why can a king? So if you're not Doresh time of the Krah, like seemingly that we thought Rabbi Yehuda was that opinion, like we saw by the begged for the widow, what should he say? The Torah says, black and white, do not have more wives. Finito. That's it. But now Rabbi Yehuda says, no. He could, as long as the rationale, what's the rationale? Too many wives, you're not going to be able to be focused on your communal position as a king. Don't get me into it right now. I'm just going to keep it without the jokes. Keep it without the jokes. Stay serious, Rabbi. Good. Now, it's hard. I have to muzzle me. Muzzle me. I'm telling you, muzzle me. It's like, come on. It's like, Mom, how can I not make good jokes? Okay, yeah. Now, onwards. You think I'm joking? I'm not. Now, so what the Gemara says, the truth is, that is, here comes the rule. So the rule is that Rabbi Yehuda, hello, Rabbi.
We have a visitor. Hey. He's thinking of maybe switching into Yiddish for next semester. Timna from Melbourne as well.
You're Timna.
Surrounded by Australians.
Timna, do you know Marissa?
No. Hello.
She's from Sydney. All right.
So is Shosh.
Hello. Shosh, you're from Sydney?
Okay, so if you can have a chair in there and yourself
up. It's so good to be
with the Hello, Australians.
Okay.
I'm not an Australian, so get used to it! Here we go, Timna.
Thank you.
That's for you. Now, the...
What? Do you need paper or anything?
No.
Okay. Okay, so now, what we just finished off the last piece to say is that, and Timna, I'll try to get you involved. We're like smack in the middle of the class, but hopefully you'll get involved because we're all one big Australian family. Whether it's Melbourne or Sydney, it doesn't matter. Now, what?
Oh, New York.
I'm not New York. Don't you dare insult me. I was born in New York. She's right. Good. Very good. She's like... Now, the... So just the last part is that Rabbi Yehuda seemingly was of the opinion that he's not Doresh time of the Krah. Rabbi Shimon was Doresh time of the Krah. Then we had this contradiction where it said Lo Yar Belo Nashim and Rabbi Yehuda was Doresh. The Gemara's conclusion is that Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that he's not Doresh time of the Krah. But here, and this is the rule is where it's explicit in the Pasuk, Shani Hacha, the Mefarish Krah. Here the Torah explicitly states the reason. So even Rabbi Yehuda will say what? It explicitly states the reason in Sefer Dvarim in Parshat Shoftim by the king, where it says Lo Yar Belo Nashim Velo Yasur. It says make sure the king doesn't have more wives, because what is the reason Lo Yar Belo Nashim? In order that he should not be what? In order that he should not be distracted. So therefore, going back to where we started, said the Avni Nezer, our second answer to our contradiction, is that the Gemara in Yevamot said that's talking about Shogig, because we have a rule that says once it's Shogig, do not give them rebuke to make them to go to Mezid. The Gemara in Erechin that says you have to rebuke them until they hit you, curse you, etc., they'll all be Mezid. And because we are not Doresh time of the Krah. That's what he says. And he says, V'chein mistamber shelo nichtav tam mitzvah b'torah. He had said it's because the Torah, it wasn't written there explicitly. So now, it's not clear. Because number one is, depends how you read our pasuk. If I turn back to page one for a second, look at this pasuk, ladies. Is it really true that it's not written, the reason behind the pasuk, going back to Chana's point? The Torah says, Hocheach tochiach et amitecha, you shall surely rebuke your friend. But then what does it say? Velo tisa alav chet. And my question to you is, what does that end of that pasuk mean? It says, I'm in the first source.
Oh. So they won't have any sin.
That's my question. The question is, what does it mean? Hocheach tochiach et amitecha. You shall what? Surely rebuke your friend. The call question, amitecha, is also, we'll get to those words. What is the definition of those end of the words?
It means that you should only rebuke if you're going to see a change.
Oh, that might be. That might be. So that in itself is a machloket. So if you go right to the next source, The next source is Rashi. Rashi says that the Avnei Nezer is correct. The rationale is not written in the Pasuk. This last part of the Pasuk is just telling me a condition and the mode and manner and how you rebuke. Make sure when you rebuke, lo tisa alav chet. Which means what? When you rebuke, make sure, what does Rashi say there? Lo talbin et panav barabim. When you rebuke the person, what? Make sure not to embarrass them. So it's not telling me what is the rationale behind the mitzvah. Like the explicit example of the king, right? That said, do not have more women in order that lo yasur, because then it will remove you from your focus on your job. But rather, here it's just a condition in the mode and the manner. And how do you rebuke? Make sure not to embarrass. So therefore, if you understand the pasuk like Rashi, the Avnei Nezer is correct and you can have that distinction. However, the Ramban and others learn it as a rationale. And that it states it explicitly. That says what? That when you give them rebuke, you must rebuke them, because if not, it's a sin on you. Because you are connected to them. Meaning you need to do what? You need to rebuke them. Because if not, their sin is upon you. Meaning, it's brought, the rationale is brought down in the pasuk. Okay? And if that's true, one could say, or other way to that you learn it, one could say that if it's bemazed, then, and he's not going to listen, maybe I mean, not exactly like the Ramban, but maybe if you rationale, a different rationale also, where the rationale would be that you must rebuke them in order that he shouldn't be v'lotisa alav chet, that you have to try and make sure that he's not sinning. Not exactly like the Ramban's rationale, but other rationale. And then it might be exactly like Chana said, how Rashi explains it, how the Meir explains it in the next sources, that what? I rebuke them only if they are going to
be free of sin.
Might even be that it's if it's obvious also we're Dorish time of the crowd, it's obvious. One could have said that that's the context of the Psukim is Ben Adam L'Chaveir. The whole context, that's what Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky points out here. The context of the Psukim is not about Ben Adam L'Makom. It's about, like Chana had said, and therefore, there's an opinion that says that if it's obvious, then also you're Dorish time of the crop. And therefore, this second answer may not be so simple. To say that one Gemara is talking about Shogeg, the other one is talking about Mazik. And furthermore, the whole question of whether Lahalacha, as we will see, whether it's Safek, whether it's B'Safek, then if he's going to be able to do it, maybe I have to give him rebuke. That's what the Menchas Chinuch says. Because maybe he will, if it's Safek, maybe he will actually listen and do tshuva. Okay. Now, there's a third factor before we start, meaning we're going to have a third and fourth factor. We're going to look at the halakha together, then bring it all together. Okay? The third factor we had said is is in front of how many people. This could be the third answer. Because not everybody likes this answer that one, that Gemara refers to Shogeg, the Gemara Nivamis is Shogeg, and the Gemara in Erech is Mezid. Many Rishonim learn it the other way. It's not true. Okay? The Ritva, the Mukhi Yosef all learned that that even the Gemara in Yevamos is talking about Mezid. That's not the distinction between the Gemaras, between one Shogeg and Mezid. But what would be a third very important distinction possibly when we're talking about this mitzvah of rebuke is what? In front of how many people are you doing the rebuking? Fascinating distinction. And you're going to help me. Timna! No, Timna. You're going to help me understand what you think. Which one is more like, what do you say? What's the difference? What do you think? Yachid versus Robin. What do you say? You can picture it. Rebuking one-on-one versus rebuking one over 50. Which one is going to be, which one is the Gemara Yevamos talking about? Which one is the Gemara Nerech talking about? What do you say?
I think Yevamos is talking about Yachid.
Good. The Gemara in, no, the other way. The other way. Which means what? The Gemara Yevamos had said, keep your mouth shut. The Gemara Yevamos had said, keep your mouth shut. Why would you keep your mouth shut versus doing it? That's if it's one-on-one. Or if
no,
it's
no,
in the,
if there are 50 people.
Ah, so one you want to say that almost goes back to Rashi. If it's 50 people, you're going to embarrass people. Good, that would be one rationale. But I might embarrass the person even one-on-one also. So you're saying there's a difference between public versus private.
Yeah, if it's public, then it's like everybody else there will know that they've been doing something wrong. Maybe they didn't want everybody else to know. Maybe they'll be embarrassed that they did something wrong and they'll want to change, but because other people are there, they'll just get defensive instead of actually listening.
So that's already, you're giving me a different svaro that I wanted to hear, which is great. You hear the difference, we said?
Yeah, a little bit.
A little bit. Meaning, the other thing which is fascinating, which has been discussed in educational forums, which is, am I allowed to embarrass one person publicly for the good of the group. For the good of the group? Which is connected to this, it's a broader, give me one second, it's a broader educational and halachic and hashkafic topic, which it goes not even just embarrassing, but it's also like, can I kick a person out of a school or out of a camp for the good of the, for the good of everybody, right? I come from the camp, pun intended, that says that you should be kicking out that one person as much as you should try to find rachamim, but, you know, people look at you as a joke if you just have rules, and then all of a sudden, yeah, everything, you let everybody back. You know, you need to be able to say that you mean business. And that's, there are sources for it, but that's not my topic right now. So, remind me your name?
Mishi.
Mishi says that there's a difference between the public, between the quantity or Rabin versus Yachin. When should you keep your mouth shut? So this is what the Ritva says. And the Ran in Yevamot, it says, when you're talking to many people, keep your mouth shut. But, and that's what the Gemara Yevamos is referring to, because they're not going to listen to you. But if it's one-on-one, even if they're going to come to hit you, then you should do that. What is the rationale? So Rav Baruch HaLevi Epstein says what Mishi?
Yeah.
What Mishi said, right? That he, the Torah Tumima quotes this Ran and the Ritva. And he says that the reason is, because in the Tzibur, in the what? In the, together, in public, what's going to happen? Each person will strengthen, each sinner will strengthen the other one, and they're not going to listen to you. In that case, keep your mouth shut. Versus one-on-one, maybe even if they will come to hit you, maybe again, going back to Rav Moshe Cohen, there's a good chance the question of the likeliness of your, of you being effective. A one-on-one, there's a more likelihood of you being effective, and therefore you have to go until they curse you or hit you, etc. Versus your likelihood of being successful in the public is much less, and therefore keep your mouth shut. Those are three approaches that we've seen so far. Now we're going to continue going some more qualifiers and then get to the halacha and a couple other hashkafic points. So far, so good? Now, I wrote down here a leader, a head of a camp, even a counselor. Okay? The Rashba has a tshuva in Chelek Hei Siman Reish Lamed Chet that he spoke to a person, the head of a yeshiva there, on how to lead and deal with people that are sinning. And he quotes a lot of Gemaras, and I'll briefly quote them, even though some of them are not so simple, how he even quotes them. He himself seems to contradict. But he says, da, he says, ki lashon raka tishpor garam. He says, you have to be careful when you talk. You could really, your words are very, very powerful. And you also have to make sure that when you're rebuking people, you have to be la'alot mina kala la'chamura. Go from easy to the hardest. Ve'ein notlim kola chavala biyachar. He says, don't try to have wholesale tshuva, retail. Don't try to do everything all at once. Ve'achar kavanat alei v'advar memorim. You have to understand where the person is. Where is the person? That was a question you had asked earlier. Somebody had asked earlier. I don't remember if it was Marissa. They had said, it depends, maybe in Aviva. Where is the person? Okay? Because we have rules called Gadol Avira Lishma. He quotes. He even quotes a Gemara, which is not so simple, in Avodah Zarah, in the third line. It talks about how Beit Rebbe would bring a korban to the Caesar, a fat korban, on their day of their holiday. And he would spend lots and lots of money to make sure it wouldn't happen that day and it happened the next day. And more money that they wouldn't even do it at all. And the Gemara says, why didn't he just totally uproot it? And he said, one step at a time. Now I had said that in itself that Gemara is complicated. Not for now, but he's trying to bring out the principle. What's the principle? His principle is, Hine zot shamana. This is what's underlined for you. Ve'ata dalecha od. Ki I efshar linhog b'chol anashim b'midachat. There is no one rule for everybody in leadership. And he quotes about David HaMelech, how he was what's called Ma'alim Ayin, from what Yoav and from Shimi, even though they were Chai of Misa. And the reason he says is because I know today I am the Melech of Israel. Ki l'kol zman mizuman. And he says, and this is what you have to underline, sometimes a good leader, a good educator, a good parent, a good counselor, a good child, or in certain circumstances, you have to turn the blind eye from a person that's transgressing. Li'itim, not only turn the blind eye, but also li'itim mitzvah. Sometimes it's a mitzvah. Va'kol lefi tzorech hasha'ah. And you, each one according to what is going on at that point. V'achacham ma'alim ayin li'itim bekalot. And he says you have to make sure not to go into machloket. And he keeps going on this tshuva here, which I'm not going to read the whole piece, that sometimes, again, you have to be able to know how to speak to people that if they're going to listen to you or not. See here, that's my basis where I was in a camp and I saw a boy not wearing tzitzit. The first thing, I was the rabbi of the camp. It wasn't the first thing I say, hi, shalom aleichem, my name is Ari, what's your name? My name is Baruch. Where are your tzitzis? Right? It's just not going to be to build a relationship long term to be able to start off on that negative foot. Therefore, we now have seen these three rules, if you will. Okay? Now let's see how halacha l'maaseh, besides that within the Rashba, we have a couple more qualifiers to see what is brought down the halacha for us to see what we got. Okay? Now, we had talked about this rule that says, mutav shiyu shogigin va'ad tiyu mezidin. And we wanted to say that maybe by shogig, you should keep your mouth quiet. Now the truth is, both the Shulchan Aruch Harav, which is the Lubavitcher Rebbe and his Shulchan Aruch, and also the Halacha L'Maaseh, as we will see, when bringing this down, says this rule does apply. We said it applies both by biblical and by rabbinic, because we said Tosefet Yom HaKippurim is even biblical. However, we have a certain hesitation here. From the Bala Itter, it's brought down in the Ramah, where I wrote down in the second to last page here. The Ramah brings down that Tosefet Yom HaKippurim, according to most Rishonim, is the Oraita, but it doesn't say it explicitly. It's learned out of by a drasha. And since it's what does it mean? It says, V'initem et ha'chodesh So there's an extra word erev there to tell me that you have a mitzvah of Tosefet Shabbat. So he says, when is this true that you should keep your mouth shut? And mutav shushes that are not explicit Torah, like the case of Tosefet Yom HaKippurim, that even though it's biblical, keep your mouth shut. But if it's mifurash b'Torah, says the Baal Iter, then you should be mochin b'yadan. So that distinction of the Aven Nezer might not be so clear. And the reason might not be so clear might be twofold. Why do I care if it's mifurash b'Torah? Then you have to rebuke the person. So there are two possible reasons. Number one is, this was the assumption of the Darkei Moshe, who's the Ramah himself, who wrote a pirush on the Torah called the Darkei Moshe. Moshe was his name. He said, if it's explicit in the Torah, then it's not shogeg. And nowadays, it might not be like this. But in those times, if it's ABCs in the Tanakh, everybody knows it. And therefore, if he's not doing it, then what is it? Then it's mezid. Okay? That would be one explanation of why, if it's actually explicit in the Torah, you have to what? You do have to be mochin, because it fits into the category then of mezid. And it's not shogeg. If that would be the explanation, then our distinction would actually still hold water. Okay, shogeg versus mezid. Because if it's mefurash b'Torah, the assumption that the Bala Iter and the Darkei Moshe explains it is because it must be that he's mezid. The other reason might be is because if it's mefurash b'Torah, then it's more stringent. It's more chamur. If things that are more explicit in the Torah, so that would be the other qualifier here. If it's mifurash in the Torah, the more explicit it is, the more what? The more serious it is. Okay? And that's why even by rabbinic laws, where a lot of times in the Gemara you'll hear that there's an asmachta. You ever heard of the word asmachta? Asmachta is that the rabbis found an allusion for what they were saying in the Torah. So the Rambam has a sheet to say that's like a mnemonic to help you remember it. The Ritva in Masechet Rosh Hashanah says that's kfira, that's heresy. Literally heresy. And he said that the reason why it's there is because once something is more explicit in the writing, then it's more what? Then it has more teeth. It's more serious. And therefore, so too over here. If it would be explicit, then what? Then you cannot just keep quiet. You even have to rebuke. Okay? And the Shulchan Aruch Harav says this is true not only if it's mifurash from a medrash psukim, but even if it's halachu Moshe Mi-Sinai, that's what you need to do. He himself says that maybe again because of Kol Yisrael Revim Zebazeh. Now, the next distinction. The next distinction comes, let's look at the Shulchan Aruch inside, halachu Maisa. It's the last two pages. He says, like we had talked about, let's say you know this guy's not going to listen to you. V'im yodeya she'ein dvarav nishma'im. So he quotes the Ram that we had said. That says what? There is a distinction between public and private. Okay, it's in the black. It's in the, what's emphasized. V'im yodeya she'ein dvarav nishma'im. If I know for sure my words are not going to be listened to. Lo yomar b'rabim lahochichan. You should not say it publicly to rebuke them. Rak pamachat. It's interesting. He says you should say it once. He says you should say it once, which is interesting. Why say it once?
Publicly.
Even though you know it's not going to be elite. Very interesting. So the Mishnah Berurah explains the reason why you would say it once is because maybe they actually will listen and they'll surprise you. Or not to like what he says, Kadesh and Pitchon Peh. For example, you know this person's going to go drink. You know these people are going to drinking. So if I don't say it, that's it wasn't in the rule book. He never said it, right? But so you got to say it because A, maybe they'll actually listen, and B, don't. But and then if you catch them going drinking, then what happens? But you never said anything. So yeah, you have to say something at least once. But after that, says the Shulchan Aruch, quoting the Ran, from then on, that's what the Gemara Nivamas was saying. The Gemara Nivamas says publicly, keep your mouth shut. And there, that's what he says, but you shouldn't continue harboring on it, because you know they're not going to listen to you. Avapi Yachid, as an individual, Chayev Lo Chicho, he says that you have to go and rebuke him until he hits you or curses you. Okay? Now, as we had said, so we see everything that I've said till now is really being brought down in the halacha. There is brought down in the next source in the Bir Halacha this opinion of the smak, which we had said from the Yireim, the Magen Avraham brings it down, that says that it's a mitzvah taseh to rebuke the person even though it's b'mezin, even if the guy is not going to listen to you. However, there are a couple of qualifiers I would say right now. I'm going to give 1, 2, 3, and then just general. Okay? Number one is the Sefer Chassidim already says that if you know, that's only if you're what? If you have a relationship with the guy. But if you don't have a relationship with the person, and if you rebuke him, he's going to come hate you. This is the Bir Halacha and Siman Tav Reish Chet in Dibra Maschah Chayev Lochicho. He says if you are going to rebuke him, and as a result of you rebuking him, he's now going to hate you and hate Judaism, then you should not rebuke him. And I've heard that maybe you might even be over Lifnei Iver that way. Might be even worse. So that's one piece. And some want to say that that's what it means. Do you have a relationship with the person? If you don't have a relationship with the person, then even the Magen Avraham says that, quoting from the Sefer Chassidim, you should not, in Siman Taf Yogimah, you should not rebuke the person. That's number one.
You should not.
If you don't have a relationship with the person.
If you don't have a relationship with the person,
you should not rebuke him. Mm-hmm. Number two. Number two could very well be that's only if you have a certain authority. This is what the Birkei Yosef brings down in the second to last source. Second to last source, the Bir Halacha brings down from the Birkei Yosef. This is in Dibra Mascha Mochin Biyadam. He says that the Birkei Yosef says that Ad Kan Lo Amrinam Didavar Mifurash B'Torah. You have to give rebuke even if you know for sure they're not going to receive it. That's only kishiyadenu tkifal overim limchopem mecheskel yad, or you have some sort of authority. But if you have no authority whatsoever, you do not have to rebuke them, since you know they're not going to accept it.
What's defined as authority, though?
So this is, again, that's a great question. I'll give an example as an application for this would be like a child to a parent, right? You know they're not going to listen to you. You're the child, they're the parent. Good idea not to... very strong advice based on this, not to open your mouth. Now again, it comes back to where we had said, some gray area. I'm going to give you the third factor in a second. We've been talking about now where you know for sure they're not going to receive it. The question comes, which I'll get back to in a second, let's say you're not sure if they're going to receive it. Like it might happen, like a parent might want to hear you tell them, look, I spent thousands and thousands of dollars, tell me something. Well, actually, Mom, you know you've been using that sponge on Shabbos? Right, so you have to know how, what, where, who, what, and when. The third and final qualifier is based on the Chazon Ish that Rav Avadya Yosef brings down, that says that nowadays people don't know how to rebuke. Furthermore, people are considered trapped amongst the culture outside, and therefore we have a mitzvah to love all Jews, the Rishaim, and therefore we don't have tochacha. That's what the Maharami Lublin said. We don't know how to. Okay? And therefore, each person that's mazed is really considered a show gig. You don't know how to, you can't hate somebody, you're not allowed to hate Rishayim. Because these people don't know how to, we don't know how to give tochacha, they don't know how to give tochacha, they're trapped, etc. So we have these three qualifiers. So if you would ask me, I had this example, for example, I'm a rabbi, but I have friends, even though I'm not a rabbi, even though at times I'm not a rabbi, I have friends. So I had friends come over, and it was right before Havdalah, and I saw the wife was eating, it caught my eye. And the halacha says you're not allowed to eat before Havdalah. If they eat Havdalah, good halacha to know. Havdalah, then eat. Okay? You're allowed to do work, as long as you say Baruch Hamavta Ben Kodesh L'chol. You're allowed to turn on the lights and get ready for a nice Havdalah song, Shlosh Shira, whatever you want to do. But eating is only after you actually say Havdalah. So I was in a quandary. I'm not a rabbi. I am a rabbi, but this person I'm a friend with. And are they going to listen to me? Is it appropriate? So I didn't know. So I walked into the car, because you escort them out of your house. They were there for Sudash Lishit. And I said to them, look, I hope I'm not insulting you. I just wanted you to know that they're not sure you know about this halakha. I hope I'm not insulting you. And they were happy with that way. I didn't know. So like you had said originally, the question of how you actually say it obviously is important. So I'll give you a couple of general guidelines. I'm going to end off one thing from Rav Kook, and then we're going to call it a afternoon. All good? Okay. Time does fly when you're having fun. The general rule is that if you know they're not going to be listening to you, as much as the Yireim brings down that it might be still a mitzvah of Tochiach, I think in our world, you'll basically, if you don't have a relationship with them, and furthermore, even if you have a relationship with them and you know they're not going to listen to you, it's probably going to be over lifnei iver, and you shouldn't say something. As the Yachid versus Rabim, so then you follow what the Shulchan Aruch said, what the Ramah said, which is, if you're responsible for the Rabim, you should say something. As a leader, as a counselor, there are times to turn a blind eye, and that's very important to know how to do that, and there's a Chachma to do it, to be able to properly have a relationship to do that. At the same time, you shouldn't be shying away from it. And you have to, it's part of a persona that's not, it's a little anti-Western culture. And we have to figure out, I'm a person who tries to learn a lot from Western culture. And at the same time, the Western culture is very much, you live your life, I live my life, I'll not get involved at all. And whether you apply the principle of Kol Yisrael Reivim Zeh Bazeh, which the Avni Nezer brought down as an application, the Shulchan Aruch Arav brought down as an application, so did the Ritva, meaning it's definitely intertwined in here. The concept, we believe that we do have responsibility, and you have to figure out how to speak to people. And sometimes, like we had said, if you are going to estimate that they're going to hate you from it, so then the Gemara and Yavama is very much, you should definitely keep your mouth shut. Two last points. The Rabbi Abba had said it's a chovah. And he quotes a pasuk in Mishlei. So I'm going to end off with 2 points. He quotes a pasuk in Mishlei Tet that says, "Al tochach leitz, do not rebuke a scorner, lest he will come to hate you, pen yisna'eka. But rather, hochach lechacham ve'yaveka. You should rebuke a chacham and he will love you." So it's obvious. Why do I need Shlomo HaMelech, who's a very smart man, to tell me this? The answer I once heard from some of the parshanim is that you think it's obvious because it's talking about the same person. Excuse me, talking about two different people. But here, Shlomo HaMelech is talking about the same person. The question of, when you're rebuking somebody, it's connected to what we had said. How do you view the person? If you view the person as condescending, and you're going to be condescending as, you view the person as a loser, as a person who's not worthy, and therefore you just want to make him feel bad, then it's also for you to open your mouth. Al tochach leitz, pen yisna'eka. Because then he's going to for sure hate you, or lest he's going to come to hate you. But hochach lechacham, if you view the person as a chacham, if you view that person, not only can you view it, the word hochach means to prove, and you can prove that that person is a good person, strong person, then you have a responsibility, because it will come out that way. Just to end off with one thought by Rav Kook. Kook has a small little thing in a sefer called Midot Ra'ya about tochacha, and he says as follows. He says, Yesh la'ayin, literally 6 lines. Yesh la'ayin b'darkei b'nei Adam. Kesherotzim lahochiach ish la'asiro midarko. You should really look what's behind people when they want to rebuke somebody and remove them from their ways. Ulai ze adera, because maybe that person's ways, even though lefin yano tovahi, even though to you it looks bad and it has objectively chesronot, it's got some deficiencies in the way he or she is carrying him or herself. But for that person, that actually might be considered good. Why is it good? Because b'chesronoteha maginot alav b'ar chesronot yoter atzumot. Because those lackings or those deficiencies are actually a protective mechanism, which could be what? Much worse. If they would remove that, which you want to do, which ostensibly you're trying to be a tzaddik, but if they would stop doing that, who knows what they would be doing? So on a certain level, it's a protective mechanism. And who knows? The answer is Hashem Yitbarach Yadrichena B'Maglin Tzedek. Hashem should lead us in the ways of justice. Shelefamim Pito Yayetzeru. Sometimes it's the seductive Yetzahara. We think it's the Yetzirah saying, go rip apart this person, you're so frum. Go rip apart that person is not religious. But the truth is, Ein Zeh Ki Imro Alev. But the truth is, it's coming from a very bad place. And Hashem should help us to make sure that when we open up our mouth, we shouldn't shy away from it and adopt a persona and be confident in our religious lives and be sincere. At the same time, also have some humility and know how to properly rebuke, and hopefully each person with their friends, with their chanichim, chanichot, with their obviously their family, to be very, very careful. At the same time, don't shy away from this very, very important mitzvah. Everyone should have a great day. Thank you for listening. Thank you for learning.
Thank you so much.
Simcha. Thank you. I enjoyed it also.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Cheers.
Cheers, as they say.